This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch from Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thank you for stopping by the show. We're always glad to have you. Today, we're going to be talking about a serious issue, a new and developing kind of a career, a field, I should say, that's been dealing with a number of different things that's going on around the world. As we've seen situations in Las Vegas where two law enforcement officers, two police officers were killed. We've seen situations with Sandy Hook, the elementary school, where we've had a number of different shootings around active shooter situations, the Navy Yard, and everything else that's going on. There's an evolving career field called threat assessment that is really looking at how do you stop these situations? How do you get in front of them and maybe stop situations before they can even happen? And what we're going to be talking about is with the dynamics of threat assessment, what is threat assessment and what does it involve and how can both workplaces and law enforcement and government and other places start implementing kind of threat assessment type programs? We have the Association of Threat Assessment Professionals president on the line, Chuck Tobin. Chuck, welcome.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it, Derek.
Hey, Chuck, you got this association, ATAP. ATAPworldwide.org is the website, but the Association of Threat Assessment Professionals, you know, where did this evolve from, Chuck? I mean, how did this, you know, all in the whole threat assessment field, is this a brand new field that people are starting to get involved in?
Certainly not, Derek. Actually, ATAP was founded in 1992 in partnership with Los Angeles Police Department and John Lane, who was our first president. It was a nonprofit organization comprised of law enforcement, prosecutors, mental health professionals, corporate security experts, and others involved in the areas of threat and violence risk assessment. The association's objective really has been to learn about how to best protect victims of stalking, harassment, threat situations. And our mission overall is to share and facilitate the experiences and techniques of professionals in the field of threat assessment and or threat management.
So when we think about threat assessment and kind of the evolution, and since this has been around for quite some time, what is threat assessment? I mean, what does it entail? I mean, when you look at it, what are the professionals and this team of law enforcement and mental health professionals, what are they all looking for?
Well, Derek, you make a good point there that this is a team, and I think that's one of the things we want to make sure people recognize, that it is a multidisciplinary approach. The definition we commonly apply to threat assessment is a fact-based method of assessment investigation that focuses on an individual's pattern of thinking and behavior to determine whether and to what extent they're moving forward in an attack on an identifiable target. The concept of threat assessment is nothing new. It's been applied by U.S. federal agencies and local law enforcement for many years. And many of the leaders in behavioral health sciences have been some of the groundbreaking people in establishing this practice.
You know, with all of that in terms of the practice, and are we seeing a situation right now with a number of these, you know, because you guys deal with protective intelligence, you deal with preventing school violence, and, you know, even just looking at the resource library that you have on your site, there's a number of different areas that involve threat assessment. Is this a situation now? I mean, are you starting to get more people to really begin looking at your association and looking at what you're doing because of, we're seeing, not just Columbine, but we've seen Colorado, we've seen all these other situations, Navy Yard, we've seen all these Sandy Hook and everything else. Are people starting to talk about this even more?
No, they are certainly talking about it a lot more. And if you look at the association, we have 11 domestic chapters, Los Angeles, Northern California, the Northwest chapter, Denver, Arizona, Atlanta, Chicago, Northeast, D.C., Nebraska, and San Diego. Those are all well-established chapters, but we're actually beginning to see a greater interest internationally. We now have a cooperative agreement with the Canadian Association of Threat Assessment Professionals, the Association of European Threat Assessment Professionals, as well as the Asian Pacific Association of Threat Assessment Professionals. The globalization of the working market certainly has had an impact on that. recognize this is a global matter that can be addressed in the right way.
You know, when you look at the people who are involved in the association, they got law enforcement, kind of, you know, your prosecutors and then your mental health professionals. I mean, are those the core people? Are you also looking now at kind of saying, well, listen, we want the private sector CSOs, the chief security officers. We want, you know, I mean, how broad is the membership dynamic and who, you know, should be thinking about kind of threat assessment?
Well, certainly the corporate security teams, their CSO or other suitable people should be involved. In fact, human resources is also one of those that we encourage. If you look back at a lot of the models that are designed around threat assessment and threat management teams, they all suggest that your team should consist of your legal partner, your human resources partner, your corporate security personnel, a decision maker, and your external team, if necessary, which may include a team of experts such as your forensic psychologist, external specialized trained investigators, law enforcement, et cetera.
So with all of that, as we're evolving and as we're looking at kind of the security field and, you know, other associations, ASIS, I mean, you're probably starting to get a number of people because it seems as if many of the threats that have been, and tell me if this is right, you know, Chuck, from what you've seen, many of these things are either happening kind of in a private sector environment, whether it be a workplace violence situation, or it could be a school or something like that. Is you know, and we've had a couple of things happen now on government facilities, like a Fort Hood or things. So there is, in terms of threat assessment, everybody is basically susceptible to having a threat in their environment. Is that true?
Oh, it is absolutely true, and I think that that's one of the hardest realities for most employers, whether it's in the public or private sectors. They need to realize that violence just doesn't stop in a certain career field. It's not just a blue-collar issue. It's not a school issue. It's an issue for all sectors to worry about, and if they take it seriously and follow the practice of proper behavioral assessment, then we have at least potential for early recognition as opposed to filing police reports after an event has occurred.
You know, when we talked about the dynamics and even looking at some of these, you know, shootings and you know, I know you had made a comment one time about, I know somebody had made the president of Janet Napolitano, the former Homeland Security Director, kind of made a comment about some things can't be prevented. Sometimes these shootings and other things can't be prevented. Is that a belief that people are really kind of taking now, that we can't prevent these things? And is that a misbelief? Is, you know, can we honestly, if we are a lot more proactive and we put together some things in place, maybe change legislation, can these things be prevented?
I think the key thing here, Derek, is to keep in mind that recognition of any potentially unwanted behavior is a good first step. Threat assessment sometimes is misunderstood by individuals who might suggest we're promoting that threat assessment is a tool to predict future violence.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, it's actually designed to make us more aware of the behaviors that are indicative of future acts of violence. These methodologies that we use have been studied extensively by various professionals in our industry that recognize the existence of a pathway to violence. By following our best practice, practitioners work within a partnership model to assist them in early warning signs of future unwanted behaviors.
You know, when you talk about early warning signs, and, you know, it always is startling when, you know, we look back upon people who do certain things because the red flags were pretty much in front of everybody's face, right? You know, and then they'll start going back and looking at a person's writings, and people will say, oh, this person was acting a certain kind of way, or they posted a manuscript online or said something on Facebook or whatever. In terms of early warning signs, what should people be looking for?
Well, first of all, I think it's important that we make sure that the listeners understand that there isn't a cookie-cutter sheet kind of solution to recognizing a person who poses a risk for violence or not. All behaviors have to be taken in context, right? Just because I might carry a knife doesn't mean I have a propensity for violence. So that's why it's critical that a trained threat assessment professional is part of the assessment team. But that said, to answer your question, Derek, certain factors have long been identified, such as a fascination with assassins or assassination, abnormal interest in weapons, or social isolation and substance abuse, as well as many, many other behaviors are well known as being contributing to potential future acts of violence. So we look at the person, we look at their capabilities, and the context when making an assessment. For instance, an individual may have a desire to commit an act of violence against another, but through careful assessment, we may determine they don't possess the organizational skills, perhaps, to execute such a plan, and a simple management strategy may suitably mitigate any future risk of violence. We could also encounter somebody who might communicate a threat, but this expression may be done in an effort to coerce others to take or not take an action. So it's important that every threat is taken seriously, but also at the same time that we don't jump too quickly to conclusions. Take the time to assess, design a management strategy to help move them away from the path that they appear to be having expressed an interest in.
We're talking to Chuck Tobin. He is the president of an association called the Association of Threat Assessment Professionals. You can find their website at ATAPworldwide.org or just Google it, Association of Threat Assessment Professionals. We're talking about the business of threat assessment. How do we begin looking at and trying to work to maybe prevent some of these violent acts that have taken place in our society in recent years? And how can we begin looking forward to possibly get people who are thinking about doing something some help? We're going to keep on talking about this topic when we return. We'll be right back after this break. Listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the world of threat assessment. We're talking about the business of threat assessment. We're talking about what goes on in terms of possibly preventing violent acts, whether it be a Fort Hood shooting, whether it be a Sandy Hook or anything else. Can we look at some indicators and possibly stop people from doing certain things before they go out and take a number of people's lives and also take their own lives? We're talking to the Association of Threat Assessment Professionals President, Chuck Tobin. He has been at the organization for quite some time. It's not a new organization. It's been around since the 90s, but they're definitely starting to get a lot more recognition in terms of people saying, listen, this business about threat assessment needs to be more known internationally and also domestically. Chuck, when we talk about the situation, we were talking about these indicators. You know, I've always thought about it in terms of the families, and a lot of times the families see certain things, right? Is there a common trait that the families, they don't want to, or they try to ignore it, or they don't want to take it serious? I mean, what are you seeing when it comes to these early warning signs and what the families are doing?
Well, I think if you look back at the history of different violent acts, many times the early warning signs were present. I mean, you go back to Hinckley, even up to modern day Elliot Popper, there were certainly instances where family members were made aware of unwanted behavior. And in the case of the University of California Santa Barbara shooting, they did suggest there were concerns, and they did the right thing by communicating it to law enforcement. I think that it's important that families recognize that while they do love and embrace their family members, if they do show signs that are concerning to them, they should reach to public health and see if either mental health or law enforcement, or in some cases, maybe even the employer, perhaps their corporate security department or EAP, may be able to assist them in at least promoting that this behavior is there and see if they can get help for their family member.
You know, when it gets to a situation, and a lot of people may say, well, I have a mental health situation with a family member, they're taking medication, they're doing certain things. Is every threat, does it become a situation where it becomes overwhelming for law enforcement or maybe a corporate security scenario where you have so many people who could possibly be potential threats who, you know, may have certain patterns and indicators, and then law enforcement says, well, we can't check every single thing out? I mean, what are you seeing when it comes to this?
I think that they need to recognize that a triage system is very critical to managing your intake of caseload. So if they recognize that they have a lot of potential persons of concern, then having a properly trained threat assessment team to identify those early behaviors that are escalating in a way that makes them concerned for future violence is really a critical first step for them, as opposed to the response of waiting for something to occur. You know, they want to be much more proactive if they can.
Right, right. With the threat assessment team, do you see, and I know you have, say, have a number of different chapters, do you see a law enforcement agency or any kind of even corporate security team who's kind of saying, hey, listen, they got the best practices going on? They do. I know Secret Service has a very, very strong protective intelligence division. They do a lot of threat assessments, you know, especially any kind of threats that come to the, you know, president or anything like that. I know they do that well. Do you other people who have great kind of benchmarking type capability to say, hey, this is a model that you should follow?
Certainly. Actually, there are a lot of agencies out there that have taken on this concept and embraced it. For fear of isolating too many of my members, I don't want to pick out too many, but
sure,
there are some that I could say, such as LAPD, that formed the association, Capitol Police, obviously in Washington, D.C., NCIS, FBI, Department of State, all of which are embracing the concepts of threat assessment in their own approach to dealing with this, but the same core concepts are being applied throughout.
You know, with threat assessment, is it more of a field that is proactive, or is it more of a field that's reactive? Are you waiting to get information on somebody, or are you proactively looking to see if there is a threat out there that needs to be thwarted or prevented?
Well, I think a lot of that depends on the agency's interest. For instance, in certain protective intelligence capacities we discussed earlier, they may have an active outreach to look for persons of concern, whereas in many agencies, I think reactive is probably an inappropriate way of phrasing it, because they are being proactive by addressing any communications or behavior that are of concern before it's an act of violence. But it is reactive in the sense that some of them aren't, you know, trolling the networks looking for bad people all the time.
You know, with the mental health dynamic and bringing mental health and professionals into this and forming this team, are these mental health professionals, you know, when you look at kind of the specialization, and does APTAP, you know, ATAP, does that provide it? Are these people who are focused in on kind of like criminal psychology? Or is there a certain kind of grouping of people who you want to put together who is really going to do that strong behavioral analysis? Where are you trying to find?
Well, I think certainly mental health practitioners are part of the foundation of ATAP. We recognize that thoughtful collaboration with law enforcement, human resources, security professionals, et cetera, in conjunction with these individuals is critical. Properly trained mental health professionals, such as your forensic psychologist, possess training to assist the rest of the assessment team in understanding the individual's risk for future violence. Consumers do have to be aware that be wary of individuals that don't support necessarily a partnership model. You want to have that psychologist, that investigator, that HR professional as part of the assessment team. Recent publications such as the Journal of Threat Assessment Management, which is published by the American Psychological Association, further demonstrate how this area of practice is recognized within behavioral health profession. Currently, you know, clinical psychologists, clinical psychiatrists, you know, they are the focus group, but you do find other counselors and other behavioral specialists that are involved in this market.
You know, you mentioned something about kind of a full team, even the HR people. Do you feel that even especially in the private sector, where you know, we talk about corporate security and other areas, do you feel that threat assessment still has a long way to go to get into a lot of these organizations? Are people, you know, and some people are taking it more serious, but is it being taken serious enough with a lot of our major organizations and maybe even our government agencies?
Well, I think that that's to be determined, let's say. I think that a lot of employers recognize that it is something they need to address, but until there's a significant act, perhaps they don't fund perhaps the efforts that their internal teams may need.
Right.
But I think first, if people can just recognize that just because you haven't had a problem doesn't mean they're free from acts of violence in the workplace. You know, by definition, workplace violence doesn't necessarily mean that someone's been murdered in the office. You know, it includes all levels of unwanted violent behaviors, you know, assault, battery, or other violent behaviors meant to put people in fear. You know, incidents may stem from employees facing termination, which I think is what most people commonly associate, but it could also include domestic partner conflicts or sexual harassment that's escalated to a point where perhaps employees feel threatened by this individual.
And it seems as if a lot of times corporations and others just, and tell me if this is true, Chuck, that sometimes they just want to get the person out. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's not necessarily a situation of really dealing with it. They just want to kind of get the person out of the building and maybe off the rolls. But that does not always completely stop the threat. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true. Many times, first of all, the knee-jerk reaction to throw them out the door isn't always the appropriate solution. I mean, they may need to go, but perhaps the way they go or the method in which we manage them once they've been terminated is important. If you look at even the shooting that Farley did many years ago, he stated very clearly that once they released him, they no longer had control of him. So it is important for us to understand that a management process is also critical to the entire assessment model.
You know, with all of this in terms of management and looking at certain pieces, and just as you mentioned, you have people who feel like, well, if you're going to fire me, you don't have any more control, and I'm just going to come back and now wreak havoc, you know, upon people. You know, with all of that, I guess education about how to, you know, deal with these things is becoming so so much more paramount. Is ATAP the place where people will come and get that education? Are there models out there where a person can say, listen, I need to learn about this and I can find that somewhere?
Actually, there's two answers to your question there, Derek. The first part is that, yes, the ATAP is the place they can come to get education.
Okay.
We have typically all the chapters have training events within their chapters. We also have a spring regional conference in New York City next year, in fact, and we'll have an annual threat management conference in Anaheim, California every year. In fact, that approaches us pretty quickly here in August. So that's not too far away. I think relative to your second part of the question about what people can do, what sources are there, ironically, the American Society for Industrial Security, otherwise called ASIS, and SHRM, Society for Human Resources Management, created in 2011 the Workplace Violence Prevention and Intervention Standard. And this isn't anything that's totally new. Many of the concepts have been around for quite a while. In fact, some mirror what OSHA guidelines are currently in place. But that document actually can help them in understanding the necessity to create a threat management team, identifying and the process for communication, investigation, assessment, and response to potential incidents of violence. Many times this might require external consultation from professionals to make sure they can build the program appropriately, but this is a good first step for them. Many companies typically will say they have a policy, but once they actually take a close look at the policy and try to understand how they would manage these potential matters, many question marks arise. So that's why they need to look carefully at their process.
We're talking to Chuck Tobin. He is the president of the Association of Threat Assessment Professionals. You can find their website at ATAPworldwide.org or just Google it, Association of Threat Assessment Professionals. It will come up. They're the ones who can educate you about the business of threat assessment. If you are in a corporation, a government agency, and may be possibly dealing with certain situations, you need to know how to deal with this stuff effectively so it doesn't spiral into something that becomes violent. And a lot of times there are different ways that you can do that stuff, and we're going to talk about that a little bit more when we come back. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch from Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we're talking about the business of threat assessment. And we're talking about the whole dynamic of which, how can organizations, whether it be private sector, companies or government agencies or whoever, school systems or whoever the case is, how can they begin using threat assessment to prevent violence that happens in the workplace, happens on campus, happens within certain agencies and everything else? There is a way that, you know, people can possibly begin using certain tools to as early indicators to find out who may be a person who is going to do something and then also try to prevent this situation. We're talking to Chuck Tobin. He is the Association of Threat Assessment Professionals president. The association can be found at ATAPworldwide.org or again, Google it, Association of Threat Assessment Professionals. Chuck, when we look at the workplace and you kind of, you know, led into it about kind of preparing the workplace and everything else. Are we seeing, you know, at one point in time, there was definitely an increase of kind of workplace violence. Have we seen that kind of continue to increase? Has it stabilized? Where are we at? Do you have any kind of numbers on or a look on that right now?
You know, actually, Derek, I don't have any current numbers on it, but as you look at some of the recent reports that would suggest that incidents of mass violence have been reported at higher numbers, incidents of workplace violence, at least the awareness of those incidents seems to be much higher, so the reporting seems to be better from the media. I think that all has a very positive impact on how corporations are dealing with it, and of course, universities and school systems. If you look at Virginia, for instance, right near your neck of the woods, there, they're one of the first states to actually institute a requirement for threat assessment teams from K through 12, in addition to the universities. And I think that's a great statement by the Commonwealth of Virginia that this is an issue that needs to be addressed, and through proper education. And, of course, process management, they hope to mitigate future violence.
You know, you just made a good point. Is the fight of threat assessment, is this something that we need to get more legislation on? I mean, do we need to have more, you know, some people will say, well, people who have mental health issues shouldn't be able to buy weapons, or, you know, we need to begin mandating threat assessment professionals within school systems. Is this something that has to have a legislation route to it?
Well, that's certainly an aspect that we are approaching ourselves to make sure that we help educate legislators. What we don't want to see are, again, quick responses to legislation that don't necessarily fix the problem, perhaps Band-Aid solutions. Hmm. If you look at the Elliot Popper case, it was initially drafted as a shooting when we know that the first couple attacks were by knife. So the weapon itself maybe isn't necessarily a problem. Perhaps the focus should be more on how to fix the mental health system so they get the support they need, the funding they need to be sure that people who have behavioral conditions can be treated properly, making sure that law enforcement receives the training for its officers, its detectives, to assess and manage persons, and that corporations all embrace the concepts of workplace violence and establish processes that work within their organization.
Hmm. You know, with all of this and looking at the evolution of threat assessment, what do you see, Chuck? I mean, do you see that it's, you know, because we talked about stalking, we talked about a number of different things. Do you see this as being an evolution? I mean, does that even include, when we talk about threat assessments, does it go all the way down to a Snowden situation where now we're talking about insider threat scenarios? Is that going to be something that people are going to also be thinking about, not just violence, but also somebody who could, you know, do corporate espionage or do espionage against an organization, an agency?
Well, I think that the practices of threat assessment have already been applied by certain agencies for many years to deal with incidents other than violence. So reflecting on your insider threat issue, this isn't necessarily a new inclusion, perhaps, to behavioral assessment. Several of the forensic psychologists within our association have actually promoted this idea of how to properly use behavioral assessment. In fact, I believe a recent publication within the bio community actually referenced the value of assessment of behavior relative to the potential impact for insider threats.
You know, with all of that, and you know, I'm seeing, and you're probably seeing that the evolution now, I'm seeing more job announcements for insider threat analysis and insider threat analysts or insider threat specialists or things like that. With this field, and I don't necessarily, you know, some of this involves, you know, the dynamics of bringing polygraphs in. Is there a way to begin to determine at the hiring phase, is somebody a possible a threat scenario, either for workplace violence or, you know, are we going to evolve where we're going to have a psychological batteries when, you know, during hiring? Is that something that needs to be done? Is there a way to do this ahead of time?
Well, I think currently some employers are using various batteries to assess a person. In many cases, their potential for future performance, not necessarily for future acts of violence. But anybody who's involved in a process of doing a background investigation should recognize that there are certain warning signs that may require further investigation for them to truly understand if this person is going to create a problem in the workplace. But again, also, I think that it's not just a matter of the initial employment screening. People may have a significant event in their life during the course of employment that could change the way they behave and the way they interact with others, and that's where the training really becomes critical to employers of any level to make sure that coworkers, family members, whoever you may have contact with, your community, recognize the various signs, warning signs of danger, and if they do get that spidey sense, so to speak, that makes them concerned, that they at least connect with a trained threat assessment professional, whether in their corporation or in the law enforcement community, so that a proper assessment can be done.
For a corporation or even an agency, where do we see this as best practice? Should there be an office or a person who is announced to everybody to say this is our threat assessment professional? Or should this be more of a quiet person who just kind of, you know, begins looking at certain situations? I mean, how should this be effectively implemented within an organization?
Well, I think, first of all, this concept of a program shouldn't be something that's hidden.
Okay.
Every company needs to recognize that this is a concern, and I think by offering that level of comfort to their employees that they are addressing it, that should at least give them a method of communication going forward. So I think that's important. And part of that, of course, is exercised through the training they conduct. If you look back in the 80s, Derek, you know, sexual harassment was a new concept that was being brought into the workplace. And now, if you were to find an employer that doesn't offer some level of sexual harassment training, you'd probably be astonished.
Right.
And I think we need to get to that same level here in our employers in the United States, where threat assessment, right, unwanted behavior training, relative to workplace violence should become as standardized as your sexual harassment training package.
So it's almost a matter of, and you're right, I mean, even, you know, military and everybody else now almost requires that you have to take some kind of sexual harassment training as part of that, you know, it's a mandatory type scenario. And so with it, what we're looking at is possibly having employers kind of maybe, and maybe combine it, I don't know, but say, hey, listen, these are unwanted behaviors, these are concerns that we would have if a person is exhibiting these kind of behaviors, and have kind of a training module, or have somebody either come or a video or something like that to say, this is what you should do, almost kind of a if you see something, say something type model?
Certainly, and actually there's already some videos out there. You might be aware of the Run, Hide, Fight video that was recently put out.
Sure.
That concept's been out for some time, but that video's relatively easy to obtain. And while that's it's a good learning opportunity for employees, it doesn't necessarily embrace all the ideas that we want employers to take on, such as the early recognition intervention as opposed to just the reactive approach to an incident in the workplace.
You know, I know me and you talked at one time, we got to take a quick break, so I want to hit this when we come back, but I know me and you talked one time about organizations, there are proactive steps sometimes, and sometimes workplace, whether it be the management of how they treat people, sometimes you can change, whether it be seating arrangements or how you even just deal with people, sometimes you can prevent that kind of resentment or that kind of workplace violence scenario. Is that true?
Well, certainly. I think that a big part of what we have to learn to do is to take the expertise of your security professionals within the workplace, your legal partners, and your human resources professionals, and determine what the best way is to manage people away from future acts of violence. And if that violence stems from conflict in the workplace between coworkers, then perhaps proper coaching and counseling and training might be suitable. Or perhaps in some cases, reassignment might be necessary, up to perhaps including termination if the person does present an ongoing risk, for perhaps from sexual harassment that's invasive.
Right, right. We're talking to Chuck Tobin. He is the president of the Association of Threat Assessment Professionals. You can find the website at ATAP Worldwide. They've got a number of resources on there. Great organization in terms of people learning how to assess threats in the workplace, in any kind of workplace environment, and also school systems and other places, not just workplace, but in all kind of environments, and assess these threats and hopefully prevent them before they turn into an act of violence or act of harassment, an act of stalking, or something that kind of unwanted behavior. We'll be right back with our last segment after this break. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we've been talking about threat assessment. We've been talking about how to prevent threats within the workplace, how to prevent another Sandy Hook, how to prevent another any kind of shooting that's been going on, all these mass killings of different people in school systems and workplace environments, how to prevent another Fort Hood. We're talking to the president of ATAP. ATAP is the Association of Threat Assessment Professionals. Chuck Tobin, he's the president. You can find them at ATAP Worldwide or Google Association of Threat Assessment Professionals. But we've been talking about how to deal with this situation. Chuck, as we look forward and kind of going into kind of workplace scenarios, in terms of if somebody was listening to this right now and say, hey, listen, wow, good idea. I need to start implementing some things right now. What would you say is kind of like the several steps that a person needs to begin doing within their agency or organization or school to set up a good threat assessment team?
Well, I think the first step is to make sure that they have a policy. You would be surprised, Derek, the number of organizations that actually don't have workplace violence policies. So first, you know, draft a policy that is available. There's plenty of templates available, but you certainly want to find one that is suitable for their company. Many times, again, they might need an external consultant to do that, but they can certainly design something that is appropriate. Once they've done that, then they have to really, again, look through the process of what's going to happen. As I mentioned earlier, they can look at the ASIS SHRM standard as a guideline. They can look at the OSHA standard as a guideline, all of which go through certain key points that should be incorporated in their threat program. Certainly one of those would be the creation of a threat assessment or threat management team, as well as understanding how that team would function within certain areas. And then lastly, as they've developed this team, is they have to really decide to invest the time and effort to put training in place to make sure that employees understand what behaviors are unwanted and what to do when they recognize unwanted behavior, that supervisors understand and learn to recognize those behaviors early on, again, how their role impacts the future management strategy. And then the threat assessment team also needs to receive training to make sure they understand what their role is in the long-term assessment management of this individual away from violence.
You know, as you look at the policy, and as I'm thinking about it, too, I'm thinking about different places that I have worked at before, and I never remember seeing, you know, you saw something about dismissal, you know, if a person consistently has late tardiness or other things like that, and a couple things for termination, but you never really saw anything for unwanted behavior, which is to your point that now organizations need to have kind of almost an employment policy or employee policy that deals with unwanted behavior. Is that what we're talking about?
Well, certainly. I think that your workplace violence policy should be broad enough to include any act that puts other employees in fear.
Okay.
Right. So if I'm bullying other people and they're intimidated by me, that is in effect workplace violence.
Okay.
So they should make it broad enough that allows them to capture all these unwanted behaviors, because these may be early warning signs of future aggression.
Right. You know, with all of that, are you looking at, when we talk about developing maybe a threat assessment professional, does this person need to be somebody's full-time, or this can be kind of a joint duty for somebody? Say, hey, you're the HR person, but you're also my threat assessment professional, especially as I'm thinking about maybe smaller organizations or smaller agencies who may say, we don't have a full-time security team, or we don't have a full security team on site. And, you know, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think the first thing is they need to make sure the person who is doing this is properly trained.
Okay.
And that does take a lot of time. If you look at our association, we've designed and planning to release a certification program for people that have this type of responsibility. And the way we've reflected on that is that they must have a certain number of years of experience in order to properly do assessment. So I wouldn't want to suggest that similar to some categories where they might wear multiple hats and assessment something they do on a weekend.
Okay, gotcha.
They want to have at least substantial caseload and experience, because that's really how they begin to understand how to apply these various elements that are critical. That being said, you'll find that, you know, certain investigators, perhaps in a corporation, may have some responsibility for threat assessment in addition to their normal investigative role.
Right.
But again, through experience, they begin to understand how to apply the best practice.
Is there going to be an evolving market where maybe if you're a smaller organization, maybe a small, mid-sized company or agency or something like that, but you are seeing certain things happening, is there going to be a market where you may be able to go to an outside, you know, almost a consultant, go to an outside threat assessment professional, and then bring them in to begin helping with the process of helping with maybe deal with a person or a situation?
No, certainly. There already is. That market exists already.
Okay.
So many companies utilize an external subject matter expert to handle these cases. So they might have their threat assessment team that has true core knowledge of the organization, but then they might take a forensic psychologist or other threat assessment professional to tie them into that group as part of their program.
So with all of that, and with, say, for instance, somebody was looking for something like that, would they find that on your website to kind of say, hey, listen, I could possibly find a team in my local area or within a region that could help me out and I can call them?
No, certainly. They can go to our website, and actually if they contact the association, mm-hmm. they routinely will advise the board, who will then reach out to the forum of members who then can contact the individual. So, and of course, they can always contact local chapters, which their information is available, and the chapter themselves can direct somebody to them that has proper experience for that type of organization that they're approaching.
As we look at, you know, kind of the future and begin kind of, you know, thinking about the evolution of threat assessment with social media and other dynamics like that, some people will kind of say, hey, it's such an overwhelming piece in which people can look for indicators. Is there any technology that is also being utilized, Chuck, that to begin helping with threat assessment, or is it really is that person who can really get into it and understand the nature of a person, or is it a combination?
Well, it can be a combination, but the reality is that the technology is only going to be able to gather so much.
Okay.
At some point, you have to have the professional assessment of a human looking at context of the behavior and everything that goes into that. So while we could probably use tools to do collection of certain attempts to penetrate or certain attempts to circumvent security practice, the fact is that in the very end, you need to have that assessment professional evaluating that person.
Because, I mean, have you seen a trend where people are kind of saying, well, you know, we have the great technology tool that can, you know, look at keywords on social media and we can determine certain. I mean, have you seen that evolution beginning to happen?
Well, I think there's certainly a leaning towards that. Part of that is because many times we want the easy solution.
Right,
what's
sure.
the quickest way to facilitate this this problem when there isn't always a short answer to assessing somebody's risk of violence.
Right.
You know, we know that certain people may communicate threats, but perhaps the fact that they communicated the threat might make them less of a threat to us in reality. So we need to, again, look in context, again, of all the behaviors that they've produced beyond just what they might have said on social media. You know, did they say something that made us concerned, and then they traveled towards the location or proximity to the individual that we're concerned about? So those are things that have to be evaluated that maybe won't be able to be ideally completely assessed through any tool.
You know, check for the last minute. For the person who possibly is hearing about this and says, hey, I want to look into this and join, what are you evaluating when you're looking at a possible member?
Well, ideally, our members are people that have some experience in threat assessment. That's always been kind of the platform for the association. Now, that being said, there are HR professionals, there are police officers, there are executive protection professionals that maybe in the true context aren't doing threat assessment on a daily basis, but they do have to deal with assessing individuals' behavior on the spot sometimes. So those people are valuable to us as an association. We want them to participate. In fact, I would be more than happy to see that every law enforcement agency in the United States actually gets a single individual at least educated on the department about threat assessment.
Hmm. This is some good stuff. We're talking about threat assessment. We've been talking to the president of the Association of Threat Assessment Professionals. You can find them at ATAPworldwide.org, or again, Google it, at Association of Threat Assessment Professionals. Chuck Tobin, he is the president. And if you need some information about this, the website has it. If you need to find somebody as a threat assessment professional to maybe help your organization or your agency, they also have this at the association. And if you need some education, you can also find it at the association. If you're a possible person who wants to join an association and maybe start getting that education to become a threat assessment professional, you can also find this at the Association of Threat Assessment Professionals. Chuck, thanks so much for coming on Fed Access. I definitely want to continue this conversation at some point as we continue to deal, you know, with these situations, and hopefully we can get past them with more and more threat assessment professionals.
Thanks, Derek. I truly appreciate the time.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.